segment here on Democratic Talk Radio. My name is Al Lawrence, and my guest for this evening is Mr. Dylan Malone.
Hi, Al.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Great, great. Thanks for joining us here on Democratic Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And now, I remember you, and as do a lot of folks, a lot of Americans remember you and your family, and of course, your son, Ian Malone, and that's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I live in his shadow, Al, to tell you the truth.
it's often that way with parents, isn't it?
The most famous two-year-old on the West Coast.
Tell our folks a little bit about Ian.
Well, Ian was born in September of 99, and there were some medical mistakes made during the delivery, and he got injured pretty badly and suffered some brain damage. And as a result, he had a hard time, still does, unfortunately, has a hard time with swallowing. And it seems like such a small thing, but you can't breathe well if you can't swallow, and he gets into a lot of trouble. So it wound up, when we took him home from the hospital, that he was going to need some nurses to stand near him with the suction machines to keep his airway clear.
Round-the-clock care.
Yeah, well, 16 hours a day. Luckily, when he goes to sleep, it's much better. We have to be careful, but
he's relaxed and his passages are open.
Exactly. We have if you position him just so in the bed, he's pretty well off most of the time. Not to say we don't get up with him a fair amount, but
I can imagine. For my goodness.
But all in all, you know, we were just excited to get out of the hospital
And bring him home.
Exactly. Yeah. The insurance company told us it was not going to be a big problem. We'd be a lot happier. In fact, they were kind of shoving us out the door of the hospital. Spent a lot of time telling us how much more convenient it would be to be in our own home.
And how long was Ian there after he was born? I mean,
about 2 months.
About 2 months afterwards. Yeah. Okay, so he's about 2 months old by the time he went home.
Exactly. And sometimes kids who take an injury as bad as Ian's are there longer, but I think our HMO was anxious to quit paying those intensive care unit bills.
So
a lot cheaper to get him home. And it would have been better for everybody. I mean, they made a lot of promises about how, you know, we were very lucky. We had a generous plan that covered home nursing. And so we came home, and I think now I have a better understanding what was going on, is they thought he was going to die. They figured he had a lot better chance of dying if he was at home than in a hospital. And so they wanted us there. After a couple of months went by, about 30, 45 days went by, things changed a lot.
So they were weighing your son's life on a cost-benefit analysis.
Exactly. They knew how much nursing cost per hour, how many hours a day they were paying, and they had it all formulated out as to, you know, how long they could afford to pay that before it would start being more expensive than other ways, of like institutions and things like that.
Oh, my gosh.
So when he turned out to be a resilient little guy and didn't do anything like die on them, then all of a sudden they sent us a letter saying, yeah, you know, this nursing isn't covered. You're going to have to, you know, learn to become nurses yourselves, because this is just custodial care. Anybody can do what you're doing, and it's just not medically necessary.
I see a pattern developing here, Mr. Malone.
Yeah. How badly you need something done is directly proportionate to how expensive the procedure is. That's what it turns out to.
My goodness.
And so, anyway, make a long story short.
No, that's okay. We have a few minutes. Tell us just a little bit, a few more of the details,
sure.
Because this story is just, it got kind of short shrift during the campaign. You know, in certain places it got a lot of publicity, but I don't think it got the kind of publicity that was needed to tell about the kind of message that President Gore was trying to talk about with these HMOs and the kind of care that Americans have been getting with HMOs.
Well, contrary to the media spin, you know, Al Gore is a very modest person, and he told Ian's story sometimes on the campaign trail, and we'll get to that in just a second, but he was very hesitant to play up just how much he did to save Ian's life. To hear Gore tell the story, you'd think that, you know, he signed a form and everything was fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot more extraordinary than that. But he's just being modest. But so here we are. Ian's a couple months old, and a few months old now, and we've started realizing we've got a fight on our hands with the insurance company. And the pediatrician, we're very lucky to have a good pediatrician. She wrote a letter saying, you know, Ian's going to die if he doesn't get this nursing care. There's really no alternative. We got similar letters from the nurses themselves and from some therapists and those kinds of things. And so the insurance company just denied again, went through an appeal, that was denied.
That must be unbelievably difficult to take, Mr. Malone, those denials.
We didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, we contacted an attorney, a huge law firm in Seattle, and said, you know, we'll spend whatever we have anyway to try and fight this insurance company. And that's when we learned that you can't sue many types of HMOs.
Is it an arbitration basis?
What it is, any insurance company that is an ERISA-type insurance, this is about half of all insurance companies, are immune to the state court system.
Mm.
So this was one of those...
Well, then how do they arbitrate any disputes about policy, is it?
It's all done internally. The insurance company is judge and jury. You can appeal, but you're only appealing within the insurance company. No outside help. You don't go to a certain courtroom or a board. They're completely above the law. It's unbelievable. I mean,
and they're going to be looking out after the bottom line.
That's right. So, you know, of course, when you file an appeal, it's just one doctor who works at that HMO reviewing the work of another doctor who works at that HMO.
And it's almost a rubber stamp.
Yeah, nothing ever changes.
Mm-hmm.
The first no is a permanent no, 90% of that. So... at that point, we found out that they were discussing a patient's bill of rights for our state down in Olympia, our state capital. And we were invited, our attorney had set it up for us to go and testify before the House committee, which we did. And sure enough, they did wind up passing a state law that helps. Only problem is, again, these ERISA-type insurance plans, which is about half of all Americans, they're immune to state law. So I'm glad that for the 50% of Washington state that just got a bunch of new rights and protections, but it didn't do anything for Ian or for so many others. You know, if you work for a big company, your odds are it's an ERISA.
Wow. Boy, what a mess. What a mess we are in, Mr. Malone.
It was terrible. It was a very dark time. It was about this time we get a call from the insurance company angry with us because they'd written a newspaper article about our trip to Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And Christine starts crying and says, that's my wife, she says, what do you want me to do? I'm out of options here. I'm fighting you every way I know how. The doctors tell me Ian's going to die without this care. And their recommendation was that we should put him up for adoption.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a really hard time.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I don't know how they sleep at night at these companies.
I just don't understand things like this. It's just so far beyond something that I can even comprehend, Mr. Malone. I mean, let alone have you poor folks go through something like this is just gut-wrenching.
Well, it was getting close to Christmas. We had already exhausted all but one final appeal, we were trying a few last-minute tricks, but we brought in some Seattle television stations, and we hoped we could humiliate the insurance company into doing the right thing and honoring their contract. And it worked. It bought us. They called us up and said, well, we're going to keep the care in place a little longer until the final appeal is exhausted.
Only because of the public outcry and that they realized that they might get caught, did they back off.
Yeah, if it wasn't for a couple of brave Seattle television stations, a little bit of local news coverage, we wouldn't even have made it that far. Then on December 24th, I got a phone mail message, and it read pretty close to verbatim. This was the message. Mr. Malin, this message is for Dylan Malin. Your son, Ian, has had his final appeal reviewed, and we have decided to end all care effective within 30 days. You have a nice day.
Oh, my gosh.
Just a message on a voicemail machine with all our names all butchered. I mean, they didn't even know who we were.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was our Christmas present from the big HMO. And so We were out of appeals. We were out of options. We had 30 days left of nursing, and then it was over. And
then you were on your own.
Then we were done. Mm-hmm. We could have either taken them up on their option to put Ian into some kind of institution and let the state pay for the care, which would have been horrible.
Disastrous.
Unacceptable.
Would have
or
been, right.
Kept him at home all by ourselves and tried to take care of him without any medical training and
mm-hmm.
risked losing him.
Mm-hmm.
He could have died. So we didn't really know what to do.
So what did you and your wife decide to do, Mr. Malone?
Well, there was an incredible stroke of luck. It was came to my attention that Al Gore, Vice President Gore, was going to be coming to Seattle for just one afternoon. He was going to give a speech kind of fly in, fly out. And I just thought, you know, he believes in this patient's bill of rights.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try it.
What the heck?
Yeah. What have I got to lose?
I made a couple of phone calls. I faxed the newspaper article that the Seattle Times had written about our little trip to Olympia and to his staff
mm-hmm.
in Washington, and thought that, you know, that was a noble effort, nothing's going to come of it. And then the phone rang, and it was the Secret Service man asking for my Social Security number and Ian's nurse's Social Security number. He said, "Why are you asking?" He said, "Well, you've got an appointment. We got 20 minutes with the Vice President."
Wow.
This weekend.
Wow.
I almost needed medical attention at that point.
I'll bet you almost fell over.
It was something like the knight on the white horse running in. I couldn't believe it was happening. So we obviously met the Vice President that mm-hmm. That next week, that weekend. And we had that 20-minute slot at his suite downtown Seattle in his hotel there. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be 20 minutes. Actually, it went a little more like this. You open the door, there's Vice President Al Gore, big as life.
Yeah.
And he immediately hugs everybody and welcomes us in, and you can tell he's worried about us right
mm-hmm.
off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a large room, and there's all the vice presidential staff working in one area. There's some campaign staff working in another area, and then we're way over on the other side of the room in in a nice, comfortable living room type of place. And he sits down right next to us, and he asks us if we wouldn't mind just going through the story, explaining what we've been. Can I bring him up to date?
Yeah.
He said, "I've been briefed, but I kind of like to get the details."
Mm-hmm.
And so we take him through it. It takes about 5 minutes before he's literally shaken up by he seemed awfully angry to me by what he was hearing, particularly when he heard that they suggested adoption.
It affected Al Gore just like it would affect any good father.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had his grandson, Wyatt, was about a month older, well, right to the day, he's a month older than Ian. So
right. It affected him personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he also knows what it's like to be in a hospital bed wondering if your son's going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
He's been through that experience, mm-hmm. too. So I think he really connected to what we were telling him. And our 20-minute meeting is suddenly 40 minutes long, and he's calling over. He's asked me what he could do to help.
Now, Mr. Malone, before you continue about what the Vice President Al Gore did, I need to take just a real quick break for just
sure.
a second, and we'll be right back right after this, so don't go away. Okay, we're back from the break, and I'm talking to Mr. Dylan Malone, the father of baby Ian Malone, and continue. We were just talking about your visit with Vice President Al Gore, and you were talking about what the HMOs had been doing to your son. Mr. Malone?
Yeah. At this point, I think it's fair to say that Vice President Gore was pretty angry and looking for some way he could help. And when he asked me what I wanted him to do, you know, he volunteered calling the HMO personally, and he said, "Do you think that would help?" And I said, "Probably worth a shot, Mr. Vice President."
Sounded pretty good, too, at this point, right?
We'll take that.
Yeah. If the Vice President calls the HMO, something might get done.
That's worth a try.
Mm-hmm.
I said, the other thing that has worked for me up until this point, a little bit, has been of some help, has been publicity. Seems to be the only thing the insurance companies at all afraid of, because
it's the only thing that's backed them off.
Exactly. You know, that's the only thing that actually hurts their business, is if their reputation takes the beating that it so richly deserves.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only, he said, fine, I think I can help you there. And he stopped what we were doing for just a second, had the staff or Secret Service, I forget which, run down and grab, he said, you know, it's a lucky stroke. We have Robert Pear, one of the most renowned reporters in healthcare. He's a New York Times reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happens to be traveling with us at the moment in the pool.
Wow.
Yeah, just a stroke of luck. And so he went and he fetched Robert Pear and brought him up to the suite for an exclusive one-on-one interview.
Now, isn't that great? Just go get me the number one healthcare reporter in the country and bring him up here right now. Huh? Isn't that great?
That was absolutely unbelievable.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Robert Pear was there within minutes, mm-hmm. and we told him. Actually, the vice president has an extraordinary memory. It's like a lockbox, I guess you'd say. He remembered everything we told him. He went through and told our story just better than I could have done it myself. It had all the facts straight, right down to Ian's birthday, and explained it all to the reporter. And we talked to the reporter for a few minutes as well. And anyway, we about left it at that. The reporter, it was time for him to go. We knew we'd have a big story on the A section of the New York Times, and hopefully that would do the trick.
But, mm-hmm.
We went to a rally. The vice president asked us if we wanted to go, and I said we were probably going to go. Why not? You know, we'd like to see a speech. And so we went our own separate ways and went to the rally there in Seattle. Gore gave his fantastic stump speech that he always gives.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but he's compressed it down to about 6 minutes long. And then he says, you know, the Malones are right there. And he goes through Ian's story, kind of improvises, retelling Ian's story to the entire crowd there. And people are screaming and you know, give him hell, Al, the union guys are saying.
Go get him. Get those HMOs, Al.
He just, I mean, talk about presidential. He took his fist and he's shaking it at the camera and he's saying, don't you do it. Don't you cut this child's coverage. Just furious.
Looking him right in the eye.
Oh, just staring him down. And
wow.
Well, the rest is history. The next thing you knew, yep. We're on the Today Show.
Right.
And all these other huge national.
And that's where I picked up on the story right there.
That was quite an experience,
and,
too.
And how is Ian doing now?
You know, he's doing all right. Back then, it was really open-ended, because
mm-hmm.
a brain injury can just about go any way.
It was touch and go.
Yeah. Now, he's alive. He's healthy. He has made some progress, but
mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a sad injury. He really was hurt badly.
He's almost three?
Yeah, well, about two and a half.
Two and a half, yeah.
And It's hard to say what's going to come next for him, but I'll tell you this much. His quality of life and the fact that he's alive at all are directly the result of this amazing intervention. In fact, it wasn't just that. You know, publicity eventually dies down. But so every time that the vice president would come anywhere near Seattle for the entire rest of the campaign, he always made sure to come and visit with us. You know, we saw him on
Air
Force Two. Oh, yeah, we saw him everywhere. We probably saw him six or eight times since that first meeting.
Now, I've only been lucky enough to meet, I call him President Gore, because as far you know that how we think around here at ETR, Mr. Malone, that he's the real president. And so, you know, I've only had the honor of meeting him one time, and that was just here recently up at the big rally we had in Nashville. We just had a big Democratic rally. It was on C-SPAN, and Steve Crockett and I, we were all there, and it was just great, and that was the first opportunity I've ever had to meet him.
It was an amazing speech. It was so nice to see the true president of the United States back in action again. But,
yep.
You know, he's been in a very, he respects the way that our Constitution works. He's a great, great man. He's a great American.
He's got more integrity and more ethics than any politician that I can think of in recent memory.
That's right. I think he's navigated some very difficult waters with as much dignity and love of country as anybody could have. Well, as I would have expected, knowing what a fantastic
president this is. And that he will make.
Yeah.
Because I tell you what, we're going to... I'm very hopeful that he is the nominee for our, for the Democratic Party, Dylan, and I'm going to do everything I can to see to it that that's exactly what happens.
Don't worry, he will be if he chooses to do this again, and my instinct says that he will.
I hope so too.
Although that's not some sort of insider knowledge.
Right, me neither. Right.
The Gores and I don't go bowling on Tuesdays.
Yeah, right. That's right. I don't think you know any more than I do.
That's right. I think it's his for the taking if he chooses to do it. And at this point...
And we need him now more than ever.
Don't we? I mean, for a year and a half ago, we were at peace and prosperity, and now we're at war and recession.
Yep.
And we need that kind of leadership.
And if you want to return us to peace and prosperity, then Americans have to vote Democratic and continue to do so and not let the large Republican-owned corporate media keep bamboozling the American public.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things we can do. We don't just have to wish for it. I mean, there's the 2002 races.
That's right.
There's already political action committees forming up that you can, you know, just write your check for $20.04 and send it off.
That's right.
It would make a big difference.
That's right.
There's a lot of ways to turn the tide.
And let me tell you something. Those small checks add up.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would, of course, recommend, a big vote coming up this week, is campaign finance reform.
Yeah.
A lot of
finally.
Things coming up.
We've been waiting for this.
Yeah, we sure have for a long, long time, 10 years.
It's almost the amount of time I've been waiting for a National Patients Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Maybe an Enron-type scandal related to the Patients Bill of Rights would help the way... it's just a matter of time.
I think they've already had a couple of those, but unfortunately, they weren't quite big enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's really... but you know, the occupant of the White House, President Bush, we'll call him for want of a better term. Well, I've heard some better terms, but I won't use them on the program. he has done everything in his power to destroy, you know, our pet issue, a meaningful patient's bill of rights.
That's right. And what that says to me is those kinds of actions, it says that they care very little for the average person.
Hmm.
The current leadership of the Republican Party really only cares about people on the upper end of the pay scale, the more affluent of our society.
Right. It's Leave No Child Behind. Mm-hmm. And then the asterisk reads, you know, wealthy, white, middle class, healthy children. Because they sure as heck were leaving Ian behind. And we made a lot of efforts to actually meet with then-Governor Bush to call him on it, you know, to talk to him about how he vetoed the Patients' Bill of Rights in his state when he was a governor,
mm-hmm.
and to ask him where he got the audacity to run TV ads bragging about his Patients' Bill of Rights back home. You know, we wanted to show America what his true colors were, but he artfully dodged us all through the campaign.
And it's because of, you know, his kind of people that back him.
Yeah.
You know, the corporate sponsorships that they have, because he does promote policies that benefit large corporations, and that's his brand of Republicanism.
It's not good for America, I'll tell you what.
It's just the worst thing that could possibly happen. Look what's happened in 1 year.
Well,
it's just amazing.
One thing that I don't think people are absorbed about the Patients' Bill of Rights is that it's not just any piece of legislation. This isn't a tax cut.
Right.
He took office. My number one priority is this tax cut. You know, people don't die from a high tax bill.
Yeah,
it doesn't kill you.
This Patients' Bill of Rights is probably one of the most fundamental piece of legislation that needs to be passed in civil rights legislation.
There's another one that literally some of these things take lives or destroy lives if they aren't dealt with. You know, Ian's not an isolated case. He has his own little website, and we get email all the time from.
What is the name of your website?
It's babyian.com. BABYIAN.
All right.
People hunt us down that way quite often.
I've checked it out myself. Enjoyed it.
Thanks. It helps us, too. It infuses some meaning into what happened to Ian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we can try and see that, to the extent possible, something good comes of it. And I've actually had the honor of being able to intervene for other people now and
based call, upon your experiences.
Right. I call the HMO and I say, this is Dylan Malone. And they say, Dylan Malone, as in Al Gore, Dylan Malone,
mm-hmm.
Ian. Yeah. Right. You know what? I think we can take another look at this case.
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that great?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, if it takes going on national television to turn something like that around, it's a broken system.
Yeah. Oh,
there's only so much room in front of that camera.
And only so long that we can, that, you know, that we'll be able to do that too. It must take legislation.
I'm really worried about it.
Me too. And do you think that he's going to sign the Patient's Bill of Rights in his term?
No.
I don't either.
It's hopeless. It depends on what happens in the Congress in 2002. But
yep.
what's going to happen is the Democrats are going to extend their lead by a few seats in the Senate and finally take control of the House. And that means that the Patient's Bill of Rights will stay meaningful and
mm-hmm.
worth having.
Right, until Bush is out of office, because he'll probably try to veto it.
Exactly. He'll have to.
Yeah.
They'll pass a meaningful bill, put it on his desk, and it'll be vetoed.
That's right. Well, Mr. Malone, I've enjoyed our conversation very, very much.
Thank you.
And I found out some things about Ian that I wasn't aware of, and also about Vice President Gore as well.
Well, thanks. I'll leave you with one final plug.
Sure.
There's one other website you should check out. It's AlGore-04.com, and it's another project we're running that is similar to
Al Gore's Our President.
Yeah, similar
mm-hmm.
to that.
It's
Al Gore's Our President takes the award for most beautiful Al Gore site on the internet.
Isn't that great? It's a great site, Ben. Stuart Ruffner, he's our associate producer here for DTR, and he handled our website as well, and he just does
beautiful
a great
picture.
Job, man.
But AlGore-04.com is a little bit special in that it's very interactive. Elaborate message boards, chat systems.
Oh, great.
There's even the Gore News Network where you can sign up and get every couple of days you'll get all the latest where Gore's at. And
I don't know about you, but we also have our own website. And with my own site, I don't get to check out as many other sites as I might like to because I'm so busy working on my own. Have you noticed that, too?
That's what happens to me, yes.
Okay.
The only thing that saves us is I've found a few other grassroots webmasters that are kind of working together with me. So
great.
I don't have to do it all myself, and that gives me time to keep some eye on the rest of the...
Yeah, me too. That's great.
Well, it's been great talking to you.
It's great. It's been wonderful to talk to you. We've been talking to, of course, Dylan Malone, the father of baby Ian Malone. And once again, we hope to talk to you real soon once again, and we'd love to have you back on the program.
Well, take care.